The Sonoma County Legal Line. Get answers to your legal questions on a wide variety of issues. Real answers from Satare Law, a personal injury law firm powerhouse.
I was involved in a car accident sustaining injuries. I was not at fault. Should I hire a personal injury attorney?
Personal injuries can be emotionally and financially devastating. Daniel Satare is an attorney who specializes in personal injury law with extensive experience in auto, bicycle, and motorcycle accidents, wrongful death, and more.
My partner suffered spinal injuries in a car accident. And we don't have health insurance. Can we get the other insurance company to pay for upcoming treatments and lost wages?
Daniel Satare and his team will guide you through the challenging issues of a personal injury case, always protecting your legal rights. Get answers to your legal questions on a variety of issues. Real answers from law offices like Satare Law. Find out if you need a lawyer and make an informed decision. Go to KSRO.com now and click on the Sonoma County Legal Line.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome into the KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. Good morning, Chef John Ash.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Well, I'm okay. How are you?
Well, I'm excited.
You're always excited.
But I'm especially excited today because we have a wonderful cookbook author and we have a wonderful cheesemaker who's joining us the second part of the show. And it will be exciting to tell our listeners how we suddenly realized how these two cultures are interacting this morning, crossing. Christina Cho is a wonderful author. She wrote the book Mooncakes and Milk Bread, which we'll talk about briefly. That was her James Beard Award-winning book for Best Pastry and Dessert Book of the Year. And with that, we want to say good morning. Hi, Christina.
Hey, good morning.
Nice to talk with you this morning. You're talking probably from your kitchen in your pajamas somewhere in the Bay Area?
I'm in Richmond, and I'm unfortunately not in my pajamas, but I am in my kitchen, so.
Well, it's wonderful to talk with you this morning. Congratulations on the book, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. It's sold a lot of copies. It got rave reviews. I have actually made the Dan Tat custards.
Oh, cool. Did you make your own pastry, too?
I did not.
Okay, that's okay.
But you said it was okay.
But you said it was okay.
It's okay to use store-bought puff pastry.
Yes, I did give permission, yes.
Okay.
Yes, and thank you for writing the book. I'm just in love with this book. I've been one of those people that have seeked out great Dan Tat in San Francisco for about 50 years. When I lived in San Francisco in the 1970s, there wasn't a bakery that escaped me searching out Dan Tat. And now I've also switched over to Oakland and frequented their bakeries too. Well, you're in Richmond, so you probably know the Oakland Chinatown pretty well too.
I'm learning to know it. I definitely know San Francisco Chinatown. I'm actually going there in like about an hour after our interview. I'm actually taking the ferry over there. But I moved to Richmond about 4 years ago. So I'm like, and it was during pandemic time. So I'm slowly getting introduced to Oakland Chinatown.
The book, Mooncakes and Milk Bread, has a stunning photo on the front. Dan Tat, the Portuguese tarts, almond cookie. And there's also one in the middle of the hot dog flour, the hot dog flour buns. And I noticed while reading the book that you mentioned this recipe for the hot dog flour buns was the one that ignited the idea for this book you mentioned. Talk about that.
Yes. The tray on the cover is essentially my dream bakery hall. You know, if I went there and got anything that I wanted, I would pick all of these things. The hot dog flour bun is so nostalgic for me. And yes, you're correct. It did inspire the cookbook because I started my blog, my website, and sharing recipes on the internet, I guess about like 6-7 years ago now. And it just started off purely as a hobby. And I was sharing all sorts of different foods because that's the type of cook and baker that I am. But when I shared the hot dog flour buns, it was like one of the first times I got such a overwhelming response from all these new strangers on the internet saying how much this bun like meant to them or how excited they were to finally have a recipe that they could create at home. And that's when I first got like the little glimmer of an idea that I'm like, I think people might be interested in a Chinese baking book.
Well, you really hit the nail on the head, because we really have never seen anything that dealt with and addressed Asian pastries with such passion and enthusiasm. And it's a beautiful book. The photography is gorgeous. And I just highlighted a few recipes, including the Dan Tat and also the Portuguese egg tart. How do they differ?
The custards are a little bit different, and also the approach in which the pastry is treated. So starting with the custards, I think that the classic, like, Cantonese Dan Tat, it has a really silky custard. It's made with, like, essentially simple syrup, like sugar and water cooked down, and then you add eggs to it, and that's pretty much it. And when you cook it, that simple syrup comes to the surface and creates this almost, like, glassy mirror-like effect. The Portuguese-style egg tarts, though, there is more dairy. It's a more enriched custard. There is, like, heavy cream in there, and so the fats from the cream and also the sugar in there come to the surface and caramelize, and they're cooked at a higher temperature. So you get this really distinctive,
so
like,
caramelized spot. What's the connection between the Chinese version and the Portuguese version?
Well, okay, so in the book, I actually call them Macau-style egg tarts, and so that's where the connection comes in. So Dan Tat, they originated from Hong Kong. They're, like, a very distinctive Cantonese pastry, I would consider them. And Macau, which was a Portuguese territory for a very long time, is just, like, a short boat ride away from Hong Kong. And so that's where you get those kind of, like, blending of cultures. You know, like, it's still in China. But it was a Portuguese territory, and so at some point there was this, like, blending of pastries that was going on there. So, and of course, like, in there's, like, the pastéis de nata, which is, like, the name of the more traditional Portuguese style egg tart. But in Macau, it falls in the middle somewhere between the two.
One of the most evocative and personal narratives in the book is your love for your grandparents, especially your grandfather too. And this recipe, I know, holds special significance for you in the book, Gung Gung's Almond Cookies. Would you talk about that one?
Yeah. I owe so much to my grandparents. I'm a first-generation American, and my grandparents immigrated from Hong Kong in the late 60s. And my grandpa was actually a teacher originally. He studied to be an educator. But when he moved to America, he couldn't really do that, you know. And a really common career path for a lot of immigrants was to work in restaurants, to work in kitchens. And one of his very first kitchen jobs, actually, was baking almond cookies, which was a very rare job at the time, because a lot of Chinese restaurants wouldn't really serve dessert, let alone, like, a baked good. It would be an almond cookie, or it would be a fortune cookie on top of ice cream, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so he got really good at making these almond cookies. But then it's one of those situations where that recipe kind of, like, fell to over time, because he got busy running his own restaurants. He wasn't making almond cookies all the time. And after he passed away, or actually right before he passed away, he taught me how to bake them just one singular time. And then after he passed away, the recipe was again, like, lost, because he was just teaching me from memory. So when I was writing this book and developing this recipe, I was chasing a memory of this last time that I was in the kitchen with my grandpa. So there's so many reasons why this recipe is sentimental to me.
It's beautiful. Now, there's quite a lovely section about the foundations of milk bread and all kinds of different ways of using milk bread. Would you talk about milk bread?
You call it the mother of all milk bread.
Yeah. It was really important for me to kind of break down the foundations of this recipe, because it is such an important recipe in the book, that the milk bread is the base for essentially two whole chapters, the sweet and savory buns. And I actually come from an architecture background, and I don't know, I feel like sometimes having a designer and also construction background in my head, it forces me to, like, I should break down these components so that people can really understand what they're doing. And I think that's why this milk bread recipe has been so successful for so many people, because they understand why they're doing different things, like scalding the milk so that scalding and then also allowing the milk to cool down so that your yeast can actually live and, like, thrive in that situation and have a really fluffy bread. I'm always chasing the why in things so that our actions are a little bit more impactful. So the milk bread recipes allows a few pages so that you can understand what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you for all the step-by-step photographs.
So you talked lovingly about the Eastern Bakery in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe that to us? And it's been there forever, right?
Yes, I believe that Eastern Bakery is over 100 years old, and it has new owners now. It's gone through like a few different ownerships, but it might be the oldest bakery in San Francisco Chinatown and one of the oldest in the country. Mm-hmm. And so it was really important for me to go there and see if they could share a little bit of their history with me. And a couple years ago, I got to meet with Orlando, who now owns it, and learn a little bit about the Eastern Bakery history and how they were famous for their coffee crunch cakes.
Blum's coffee cake.
Yeah. I haven't tried. Well, I never got a chance to try that one. So, like, but they were one of, also along with them, like, to kind of popularize the coffee crunch cake. So,
yeah. We need to take a break. The book, Mooncakes and Milk Bread, Sweet and Savory Recipes Inspired by Chinese Bakeries, by our guest, Christina Cho. It won the James Beard Award a couple of years ago for Best Dessert and Bakery Book. So, please seek it out. It's a joyful book. We'll take a break and come back and talk with Christina about her new book that just came out about a month ago called Chinese Enough, Homestyle Recipes for Noodles, Dumplings, Stir Fries, and More. Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KSRO Kitchen, America's longest-running radio food show, celebrating our 38th year this year. Back after this. Don't go away.
Hola, chicas. ¿Estás lista para sentirte fabulosa? This is Karina Lozano, your surgical coordinator, here to take care of you at Dr. Tom Cosmetic Surgery. Our goal is to help you achieve the confidence you deserve. If you're thinking about a breast augmentation to enhance your curves or a cosmetic breast surgery to feel more comfortable in your skin, Dr. Tom es tu opción. Looking for something extra? Try Smart Lipo. Say goodbye to that stubborn fat and hola a una silueta increíble. Voted best cosmetic surgeon 9 years in a row at Dr. Tom Cosmetic Surgery, we're here for you. Porque te lo mereces. And all is done under local anesthetic. Quicker recovery and less downtime. Llámanos hoy y agenda tu consulta. Es hora de ser la mejor versión de ti misma.
Dr. Tom Cosmetic Surgery. Online at drtomcosmetic.com. That's drtomcosmetic.com.
Let's stay young together.
Joe Montana here. In my football days, I knew the importance of a strong defense. Now I'm sharing how you can help defend your health against pneumococcal pneumonia and invasive pneumococcal disease. Are you 50 or older like me? The CDC now recommends vaccination against pneumococcal disease. Even if you're healthy, your age puts you at increased risk and over 6 times greater risk of hospitalization with pneumococcal pneumonia than adults under 50. Schedule your appointment today at vaxassist.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Right now on My Sonoma Deals, get a $50 gift certificate for $25 to your Santa Rosa and Petaluma Farmers Markets. Santa Rosa on Farmers Lane Wednesdays and Saturdays, and Petaluma Tuesdays at Lucchese Park. Get fresh produce, dairy, meats, baked goods, arts, crafts, and freshly prepared restaurant-quality food direct from the farmers and producers.
Info online at ilovefarmersmarkets.org. That's a $50 gift certificate for $25 to the Farmers Markets on sale now at mysonomadeals.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO Kitchen, I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, enjoying our conversation with Christina Cho. Christina, you have a new book that came out last month we want to talk about. It's called Chinese Enough. Would you explain how the title came about?
So my second cookbook is quite a departure from my first book, not focusing on baked goods anymore, although there is a dessert section with some baking in there. But Chinese Enough is my cookbook dedicated to Chinese American homestyle cooking. The recipes and also the essays that I write in there are kind of taking on this journey of what it was like for me to grow up in the Midwest. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. and how the inspiration, I got a lot of inspiration from my parents, my grandparents, being in a restaurant family, then also transitioning to life in the Bay Area. I moved here 11 years ago, and I had, I feel like I've had a few very transformative years since I have moved here, and how that has affected the way I view food and also cooking for the people around me. It was actually quite hard for me to kind of create a cookbook title. I don't know if you speak to many other cookbook authors, but it is one of the hardest things in the entire process is to come up with a title that really captures the spirit of what you're writing about in your food. And I didn't come up with it until the end of my manuscript writing, and I was just reflecting on everything I was writing about with my relationship with my family and my culture and looking at the actual recipes. And I was just thinking how, they're Chinese enough, but in a good way. I think there's kind of, this cheekiness to the title, but I also think it's also quietly powerful. A lot of first generation, even second, third, fourth generations immigrants in the United States, they are often questioned about how authentic the way they move through life is, their food, culture, traditions. But we all kind of find our own way that feel right for us, and they feel enough for us.
The cookbook is not organized like many cookbooks we see, and that's appetizers, entrees, vegetables. How did you organize the cookbook, Christina?
I organized it a little bit more thematically. I initially was I would not do appetizers or just soups and things like that, because that's not necessarily how I eat or how my family eats in the more traditional or more Chinese setting. It's kind of everything served at one time. You would have your rice dish, your noodle dish, your soup. I'm thinking of a big Chinese banquet, everything's being served together. But when you apply it to an everyday setting, you're kind of just picking and choosing depending on how you're feeling. And so the chapters, the first chapter, for example, is called Best with Rice. And I would describe this as kind of more weeknight-friendly meals. A lot of them are timed perfectly with taking the same amount of time as a pot of rice takes to steam. Because Monday through Thursday or Friday, most nights, I put on a pot of rice, I start steaming, and then I start working on a stir fry or a tomato egg, and that's really saucy to drape over top. I also wanted to highlight kind of different facets of Chinese or Asian American culture in which we would be making food. So there's a cookout chapter called Take It Outside. I, especially living in the Bay Area, so much of my cooking is inspired by the seasons and actually being able to cook and eat outside. And so a lot of the recipes in there are there's my favorite banh mi pasta salad is in there, a bunch of fresh dips, and then there's also more heavy proteins like cumin, cumin lamb ribs, and my mom's fried chicken, which is such a picnic staple growing up in Ohio. So there's a lot in there.
So one of the things I love in that chapter is don't be afraid of 1,000-year-old eggs.
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Describe what they are.
Yeah, so 1,000-year-old eggs, you might have seen them. For some people, they visually might look a little scary because they're dark. The yolks are green and a little yellow, and then the whites are no longer whites anymore. And they're kind of almost onyx, I would describe them. They're dark, a little bit green, and they're translucent. I grew up loving them, and I would talk to my parents, and for them, it was always a treat because they're not cheap. So when my grandmas would make juk or congee or steamed eggs, they would always cube up a century, 1,000-year-old egg to put in there. And it was a treat because the texture was so good. And it has this amazing, it's hard to explain, but this earthy, deep umami flavor that is so, so good. I understand for some people that you can't quite eat it on its own. I can because I love them so much, but it's really good just incorporated into other things. And something I wanted to do in the book was introduce ingredients that are normal for me but might not be normal for other people. And I felt that ingredient especially needed just a little bit of a love note to people out there to get them to not fear it so much, because I think a lot of pop culture has made us fear it. I remember it being something you had to eat on Fear Factor. And I was what? That's good. I would win instantly. Give me all of them. So
I have so many stars next to so many recipes, Christina, in the book, The Best with Rice. I have never worked with egg tofu sold in tube form. Have you, John?
No, I haven't. I've never heard of it.
I can't wait to try this.
Yeah, I actually have some in my fridge right now. Like, oh, I got to cook that soon. It's so good. Like I live in the East Bay. And they sell it at Berkeley Bowl, which is amazing. Like I want more like conventional grocery stores to kind of like sell these ingredients, but you can definitely find them at 99 Ranch. It's essentially like silken tofu, and oftentimes you see silken tofu packaged in tube form rather than the block. But normally, for some reason, egg tofu always comes in a tube instead of a block.
I love it.
So why?
Why
is it in a tube?
I'm not totally sure. I'm just like the processing, like whatever manufacturers, like it's just easier to kind of like extrude it that way. But the texture of it is just so good. Like imagine silken tofu, but like richer and more custardy. Mm. It's like amazing. Like the recipe in there. I wanted to be like as simple as possible, because I think for people who aren't used to cooking Asian food or cooking any food that's outside of their normal wheelhouse, there's often a lot of mental barriers to get people to actually cook this food, to actually buy this ingredient. So if you went so far as to actually seek out egg tofu, I want you to enjoy it in the most easy, simplistic way and really fall in love with it. And so the recipe is just simply pan frying it. It gets a nice crisp, almost like you're frying an egg. And then you dress it in this like sweet and spicy kind of like soy sauce with like fresno chilies in there. And it's just so simple. It takes like five minutes to make. It's one of my favorite dishes.
In a couple minutes left, I'm going to call out a couple of my favorite recipes. And John, you can do the same thing. I want to try the coconut crunch coleslaw. I've never heard of anything like it, Christina.
Yeah.
With shrimp chips. Yeah. We have shrimp chips in the cupboard at home.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I can eat that slaw with like just with a fork. I love it with tortilla chips. It's good, and shrimp chips. It's really good. It's like I love cooking with using coconut milk. I'm not lactose intolerant, but a lot of people in my family and also my friend group are. And using coconut milk is actually really nice. It's like rich and creamy, but also has this cooling effect because the slaw is like kind of subtly spicy, but the coconut milk really balances it out.
John, one of yours.
So you talked about, which I'm a lover of, and I'm never very good at cooking them, the fried pork chop, which I think was your brother's favorite with sweet and sour sauce.
Yeah.
Can you describe that one?
Yeah. So these fried pork chops, they're pretty, I mean, I would say they're decadent, but like, because you're frying like a whole thin pork chop, but they are battered in like a mixture of like cornstarch and rice flour so that they get like really, really crispy. And it's like, imagine you went to a restaurant or a Chinese takeout restaurant getting sweet and sour pork, you know? But this is like a little bit more refined, like easier to make like at home. You don't have to cut up the pork chop or anything. And then you just like kind of like shallow fry it so it gets like super crispy. Put it over rice. And then I really think the star of the show is the sweet and sour sauce. The sweet and sour sauce transported me back into my grandparents' restaurant. I was trying to like recreate this sauce that I was essentially addicted to as a child, because my favorite afternoon snack was like an egg roll, and my grandpa would fry one up for me and then give me a small cup of sweet and sour sauce to dip into it. It's so good.
But this
and
one's not tomato based.
Not tomato based, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not tomato, it's pineapple-based, actually, which was what I was missing. I was trying to figure out how to do it, and my mom was like, oh, did you put pineapple juice in it? I was like, no. And I tried it, and it's so good. Like, the pineapple juice, like, gives it this, like, brightness, sweetness, and acidity, and, like, a fruitiness that's, like, oh, and there's a little bit of ketchup in there.
The secret ingredient.
Just like it's like perfect. It's a perfect sweet and sour.
We only have about a minute or two left, but I have to tell you, Christina, that every year for 45 years or so in my stocking, my wife always puts one thing. And do you know what that one thing is?
No, I'm curious to see.
Maltesers.
Amazing. Yes.
Your dad loves the same candy that I do, Maltesers. And you have a recipe which I put 8 stars by, called it Malty Banana Cream Pie, that's made with you're nodding your head too, yes, John.
Yeah.
The powdered malt and milk, and then the crushed up Maltesers on top. God bless you for including that recipe.
I'm glad. I'm so happy that you react the same way that my parents did to that pie.
And thank you for including this beautiful chapter, Make Your Own Luck, which is all about Lunar New Year's, things you should do, you shouldn't do, good luck, bad luck. How are you going to celebrate next Wednesday, the first day of New Year's?
I'm actually going to be in New York City with my mom. I'm going on the Today Show next Tuesday, so Lunar New Year Eve, to make some dumplings live on TV. And then the next day, I'm just going to be spending it with my mom. I think we're going to get dim sum, and it'll be nice.
Oh, it sounds beautiful.
Great.
And I love to see your star is just continuing to rise. Best of luck with this new book, Chinese Enough, Homestyle Recipes for Noodles, Dumplings, Stir Fries, and More. And, of course, congratulations on the stunning success of Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Christina Cho talking with us from the Bay Area this morning. Thank you so much for joining John and me, Christina.
Thank
it was
you.
A joy. Happy New
Thank
Year.
You.
Happy New Year.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will talk with a local cheesemaker who has torn herself away from her cows for just 30 minutes to chat with us in the KS Auto Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. Back right after this.
Sonoma County's new SRO on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. I'd like to talk a bit about our market. Sure, we have great coffee, crepes, salsa, sausage, fruits, veggies, crafts, and much, much more. But to me, it's what you can't buy that makes the market special, and that's the people. You may have heard me speak with Steve on Saturday mornings on Garden Talk about buying potatoes from Tom or mushrooms from Barbara, forgetting to mention their business names. This is due to the relationships developed with those who grow the food we eat, something you can't get at the big supermarket chains. The vendors are a great resource to help create the perfect meal for you and your family. Bring your kids, grab a bite and something to drink, and shop the farmers market voted the best farmers market in Sonoma County 2 years running in the Press Democrats Readers Poll. We've been doing this for 50 years. We must be doing something right. So come and visit us at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1.
Looking for the best place for your furry friend? Welcome to Paradise Pet Resort.
Paradise Pet Resort offers all-day play in their amazing indoor and outdoor yards with daycare drop-ins for just $42 a day, or grab a 10-day pass for only $380.
Need boarding? Enjoy a $56 a night rate, which includes daycare, plus no extra fees for house food or intact mails.
Your pup will love the large doggy swimming pool, and you can keep an eye on them with the webcams.
They now offer a full-service dog grooming salon for your convenience. Come take a tour of their fantastic facility anytime.
Why settle for less? The other guys charge $55 a day for daycare, and you can't even tour their kennels.
Choose Paradise Pet Resort, where your pets play all day. Visit us online or call to schedule your tour today.
Paradise Pet Resort, where tails wag and fun never ends.
At American Ag Credit, we're more than just a lender, because you need more to support your operation. With products like crop insurance, rural home loans, a team of agriculture analysts, and more, we offer the financial strength and expertise you need to grow your business. For more than 100 years, we've proudly served America's farmers and ranchers as a cooperative in the farm credit system. We're with you when it matters, and we'll continue to be for what's ahead. American Ag Credit, your future grows here. Visit agloan.com for more.
Are you actively looking for a new job, thinking about a new career? Or maybe you know someone looking for employment.
It's the KSRO Good Food Hour. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. And we're so delighted to welcome Sylvia Matos to the show from Matos Cheese out on Llano Road in Santa Rosa. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
I know you've had a million things to do these past couple weeks since you announced the sad news that after some 45 years, you are closing Matos Cheese.
We are, yeah.
And
yeah.
Why? What led to this decision?
So we had some issues with a workman's comp thing, and it tripled our monthly cost for workman's comp, so we had to let go of our employees. My husband, my daughter Heather, and myself have been trying to keep everything going, but my dad's health has gotten worse, and I'm his 24 our caretaker. So I had to pull away from the cheese factory part to be able to take care of Dad. So
and the dairy and the cows.
And the cows and everything, correct. So we had to make the very hard decision to let go of this for right now. So we are closing the cheese factory. We did stop processing on November 1st was our last processing day. We age our cheese. So with that said, this is very hard for me. I'm sorry.
I know. But, and thank you for sharing it with us because we love your cheese. We love the family. And we have, you're closing actually the doors January 31st, correct?
Correct.
So you won't be able to visit the farm after that. But people will still be able to buy cheese online. Is this correct?
Well, we're shutting down the online store also because I'm out of stock. Yeah, I'll be out of stock by then. We are already very short stock on the original. That is not offered on the online store anymore.
So is that an aged cheese at all?
Correct. So the St. George, the name comes from the island that both my parents are from. I'll just tell you a little bit of background on that. Dad's family, Dad is actually the fifth generation in his family making the cheese. First generation here. My mom never made cheese in her life, and then her and Dad decided to try to make it just for home use. Family and friends loved it, and then from there they ended up buying the property that we have now and got a few more cows and actually started the business in 1979. We started out with just with the original St. George. It's named after the island that my parents are both from. So now we have the St. George Original, we have the St. George Picante, and the St. George Patron. The difference in those is the St. George Original is anywhere from 2 to 4 months of age. The Picante is anywhere from 4 to 6 months of age. And then we have our Patron, which is the older cheese, and that is 9 to 16 months of age. So, and it does get sharper as it goes. So, yeah.
So that's the difference, is that you can tell the difference.
The aging process, yes.
So your dad and mom arrived to Sonoma County when?
So mom and dad actually came from the Azores in 1965 when they got married. They were married there. And then
so where
here.
Are the Azores?
The Azores is 9 islands that belong to Portugal. They are basically like where New York and Portugal are. They're in the middle of the Atlantic right there. So they're beautiful islands. They are a little bit like Hawaii, except not as tropical. Not as humid. They do have all four seasons. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to go.
Have you visited there?
Yes.
Oh, you have?
Yes. I would love to be able to retire there one day.
So they arrived in Sonoma County in the 1960s. Did your dad start dairying at
Correct.
That point?
Dad started milking for different dairymen in the area. And then after I was born in 67, and they bought their first home in Petaluma. Dad then started working for LP McNair Brickyard. Mm-hmm. And then we just had like 2 cows at home that we milked every day. And then again, mom and dad started making the cheese, you know, just for home use. And then they decided to get something bigger. And so we are where we're at
then
now.
Then you moved to Llano Road.
We moved to Llano Road when I was 11. So that was quite a few years
ago. And the
ago.
First cheeses were released in 1979?
Correct. We opened, they actually started the business in 1979.
And you know who one of the first people in line was, don't you?
Who was that? John Ash.
You were buying their cheese early on for the restaurant, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, it was such a trip to also go there.
Yes.
To be on the farm. This was not some sort of slick dairy operation.
No. Mom and Dad wanted to keep everything very, very original to the way it was back home, being in the Azores. We are one of those kinds of places where people come and they feel like they're going back in time. Mm-hmm. We do everything by hand. There's no machinery to make the cheese, so it's very laborious.
How do you press the cheese?
We do it just like the old, the way they used to do it back home. The cheese goes inside of a form. There's basically, it started out with a long 2x4. And Dad made these cement block weights that went on the end of them, and that's how they used to press it. We since then have gone to stainless steel, but we still use the cement blocks.
You do.
So we still do everything just like they do back home.
Oh, my gosh. That's remarkable. Yeah. And did your mom make the cheese originally?
Correct. Uh-huh. Mom started making the cheese. She made it for many years and did a wonderful job. And then she had some health issues. So then she was able to train another lady to come in and do it.
And who was that?
Her name was Nedia. She was a Portuguese young lady, and mom trained her, and she worked for us for many years. And then when she left, I started making the cheese.
You did.
So, yeah.
Well, it's always been people with Portuguese blood making this cheese.
Mostly, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so what are the plans for the herd after you close up?
So right now what I'm doing is we are drying up our dairy cows. We will keep just a few of them with hope that maybe one day we'll be able to, start again if things
settle.
So
are you keeping the license?
I am keeping our license, yes. I'm keeping our license alive for both dairy and the cheese factory. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So we want to certainly emphasize to folks that if they want a taste of Sonoma County agricultural history, they should probably go out to Llano Road and buy cheese direct from you.
Yes, yes.
And are you open every day?
We're open every day except for Thursday. I know.
An interesting
I know.
Day.
Right.
Usually it's Mondays or Sundays.
I know.
Okay.
But see, the rest of the week, that's kind of our slowest day is a Thursday, so that's why we decided to close on a Thursday. But the weekends usually are crazy.
Okay.
People are coming in a lot. That,
but Monday would be a good time to go.
When I was out there on Monday...
It was great. There was only a few people out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So what hours are you open?
We're open 9 to 5.
Okay, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Correct.
And the 31st of the last day.
Correct.
Why don't we take a break? And I am just dying to try some cheese.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay. So Sylvia Matos is here from Matos Cheese, joining Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KSRO kitchen this morning. And we thank her for coming away from the farm for about a 45 minutes or so and sitting in with us. Back right after this.
Agricultural community farmers markets bring you fresh produce, meat, and dairy each week year-round.
Saturday and Wednesday mornings through February, 8:30 to 1, the tradition continues at the Santa Rosa Community Farmers Market in Farmers Lane Plaza. The Wednesday market has dozens of vendors, including veggies from Ortiz Family Farm and chicken and eggs from Rancho Villa in Petaluma. Rojas Family Farm offers citrus. Camacho Family Farm has winter produce from Santa Rosa. And grab local honey from Gerard's Honey. Saturdays you'll find Bee Haven Honey, lots of veggies and meats from Betha Springs Ranch, cheeses from Acadena Cheese, and berries from Kim. Pick up fresh bread and pastries from West One Bread, Redbird Bakery, and Revolution Bread. Geyserville Gourmet and Brothers products offer pickled veggies, locally made jams from Stukenbroker Farm, freshly made pasta from the Italian Corner, and local coffee from Bella Rosa Roastery.
Info online at ilovefarmersmarkets.org.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
License number 254-603.
I'm Danny from Gatelli Plumbing, and before Aunt Laura gets here, I wanted to say a great big happy new year. You rock! Ever since we first started talking to you all, you've been so kind. Oh, here's Aunt Laura. Pretend like we didn't start yet.
Hey, Danny. You ready?
Of course, Aunt Laura. Wouldn't start without you.
You started without me, didn't you?
Couldn't help myself. I love new beginnings, and there's no better new beginning than the new year.
You've always been excitable. Remember how you'd sneak downstairs and count your presents and see if Santa had been there yet?
All kids do that, Aunt Laura.
I'm talking about last Christmas.
Okay. My New Year's resolution will be to not let my impulses control me.
Yeah, we'll see. And remember, everyone, if you have drains or sinks or
water heaters, remember us at Gatelli Plumbing.
What was that, like 20 seconds?
Oops.
GatelliPlumbing.com.
in the KSRO kitchen. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. And Sylvia Matos is joining us. They're closing up shop on January 31st. It's a part of Sonoma County history that we are mourning, losing. But you do have a chance to honor them, pay respects, thank them for all they've contributed to our quality of life by producing this beautiful cheese since 1979.
And get some before it's all gone.
And get some before it's all gone. Well, will you cut directly from the wheel, too? Can we buy a big block?
Yes. That's normally how Mom and Dad always did it. We always used the big wheels and cut it to serve and let people. Once you come into the cheese factory, you get a little slice of each of the cheeses, and you try them out, and then you get an actual piece from that block.
Okay. So, now, I notice a lot of them are wrapped in the one-pound segments.
Correct. So we started the vacuum packing. We try to vacuum pack a few pieces ahead of time. It just makes it easier for people when they come in, they taste it, and they can just grab, you know, the piece that they want.
Oh, got it.
And it just makes it a little bit easier.
So can you describe the difference in flavor of the three cheeses?
So our original is more on a creamier, nuttier.
I'm going to have you talk while I put this cheese in my mouth.
Okay.
Original.
So it's a little bit nuttier in flavor. It does change with season. All of them change a little bit with season, depending on what the cows are eating. It melts nicely. It's wonderful to cook with. And again, it does very nicely with a nice glass of wine.
This is really
or
lovely.
A nice,
very creamy.
You can have it with
a grilled cheese sandwich.
A grilled cheese sandwich. Oh. You can have it with fruit. It's wonderful with a nice crisp apple, some grapes. It's a very nice little cheese where.
But it has a little aging on it.
It does. This one is from October, so it's a little bit more aged than what it normally should be. But because we are all out, that's all we had.
Well, this is the king
today.
Of grilled cheese, you know, John.
Yes. I know. It's wonderful to cook
And when
with.
He says this would be a good grilled cheese sandwich, he had actually a grilled cheese company for a while selling grilled cheese.
Oh.
So this would be a good
one. Yeah, we didn't make any money.
But. I know, but you had a lot of fun. You had a lot of fun and ate a lot of great grilled cheese and tomato soup, too, didn't you?
Yes.
During that period of time.
Yeah.
What's the next cheese, Sylvia?
So our next ones are St. George Picante. And that one's going to be a little bit sharper in flavor. It's going to be a little bit drier in texture. So it'll kind of flake a little bit more, but again, it's nice with a nice glass of wine. It's nice to pair up with different meats, either like a salami, anything like that. It'd be nice with.
This is really delicious.
And so it still has a little bit of the nutty flavor, but it tingles a little bit on your tongue, but not a lot. Yeah.
I just wanted to get back to something you said earlier, and that is your dad comes from a fifth generation?
Yes.
Cheesemakers?
Yes.
How far back does that go?
So his, I guess it would be four-time great grandfather was making cheese, just very small. I think Dad told me that he probably started out with like four cows. This was all back in Saint George and the Azores. And they would just make it at home and use it for, cheese back there is like a staple. It's one of your main ingredients for eating.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess as the family grew, the next generation learned how to do it, and they did the same thing, made it for home use. And then as far as starting to sell it was my grandfather, my dad's dad, same thing, used to make it there, made his own little factory. They built an actual little factory, and then were making the cheese there.
So your dad grew up making cheese?
Dad grew up, he did not like making cheese. He was the one that was out milking the cows and then carrying by their horse. They would carry the milk back to the factory for his dad. But there were times where he would have to go in and help my grandfather. So he did learn how to make it,
but
he didn't
like it. Did your dad and mom meet in the same village? Where did they?
Yes, yes. Both mom and dad are from Urslina in Manadish, which is a little villages in Saint George.
Oh, Wonder if they brought some cheese with them when they came over to think that.
I'd like to think that. Maybe they did. I don't know.
I'd like to think that. Put some in their sauce. Like that. And so this final one, talk about the aged one.
So the aged one is called the St. George Patrão, and Patrão means boss in Portuguese. My oldest daughter is the one that kind of came up with these names, so that was kind of neat. But the Patrão is anywhere from 9 to 16 months of age. Sometimes it gets a little bit older. We have had it where it was 2 years of age. At that point, it's a bit drier. It flakes a little bit more, but it is sharper in flavor. You usually get a nice little tingle on your tongue with this one. Again, it's wonderful. You can cook with it. It still will melt, but it's, you know, not as easy melting as the original. Again, you know, with this one, you're going to take little bits. A nice, it's always wonderful with wine. We have quite a few wineries that do use all of our cheeses, but
you do.
So that, yeah. So, and that's another sad part is that, you know, they've been coming and trying to take in as much stock as they can before we run out.
Because it's great to pair with their wine.
It is, yes.
It would pair good with beer, too.
It would. And there are some breweries that do use it also. So
And according to Janet Fletcher's article, and we talked to Janet about this one wonderful article she wrote called So Long to Another American Cheese, and that's on her website, Planet Cheese. Really loving tribute to you and the family. That this was actually sold in Williams-Sonoma catalog at one time.
Yes. Mom and Dad, when they originally started this factory, they thought it was only going to be Portuguese people that was going to buy the cheese. They never dreamed that the American people would like this cheese. Sue Conley with Cowgirl Creamery was the one that actually recognized Mom and Dad and came out and said, you know, we want to sell your cheese. And so they did. And then at one point, the Williams came in and said that they wanted to also use our cheese in their catalog and stuff. So it was sold there for quite a while. It also was used quite often on first class airlines. So Mom and Dad were very stoked about that. They were very proud about that. They'd always tell the story how, yes, our cheese is served on first class.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, yeah, so lots of wonderful memories, you know.
And it was sold, you know, nationally, certainly on the East Coast, too, wasn't it?
Yes. Lots of Portuguese on the East Coast. So
especially in the Boston area.
Yes.
I know that. I went to school in Boston, the big Portuguese community.
Yes.
So they embraced the cheese early on.
Yes.
And are any markets in Northern California selling the cheese at this point?
We do. We have, there's Oliver's Market. They sell it in all of their stores.
May still have some stock.
Yes. Okay. Firkrest Market in Sebastopol. Whole Foods will carry it also. I'm trying to think. Not in your big chain stores. Or anything.
Does Big
like
John's
that,
in Healdsburg, do you know if they sell it?
I'm not positive that if they do, they don't get it directly from us. They may get it from one of our distributors.
A distributor. So there is a chance to get some, but of course, nothing is like visiting the farm.
Right.
John and I both were talking about. I didn't start going till about the mid-'80s, 1980, late 80s. John was there way before me, but we both had strong memories of. Was the barking dog there? Is that what you asked me?
Yeah.
And there's probably been a lot of different generations of barking dogs.
Yes. Did,
how far back does that barking dog go? Since
probably from when we originally bought the land. We've always had a dog, a watchdog basically. But we do have the barking dog. And I remember you coming out and you asked the first thing and you said, oh, yep, it coming down the driveway. It was barking.
Well, I said, Sylvia, they can't be the same barking dog because they haven't been out in about 8 or 10 years. So what's this dog's name?
So this dog that does the barking now, his name is Leo, and he actually belongs to my daughter, Heather, who lives there on the farm with us and helps us on the farm.
Well, he's a good watchdog.
He is.
When you drive past that gravelly road,
you know
someone's coming.
We know someone's there to buy cheese, yes.
And you have the smallest retail tasting facility I've ever seen in my life. It can't be more than like 10 by 10.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you just come in, taste your cheese, buy your cheese, and go out.
And go about your business. And you're the person that runs it's just lovely, the young lady that's there.
She's very helpful. Yeah.
So you get a taste of the cheese and then decide what you want.
Exactly.
In any quantity you'd like.
Exactly.
Give us the address and best directions to get there.
So our address is 3669 Lana Road in Santa Rosa. And the best way, you can either come, if you're coming from Highway 16, I'm sorry, 116, you would just take the Lana Road and come down, and you'll see us on the left-hand side. Okay. If you're coming from the Highway 12 side, you just cross Todd Road, and we'll be on your right-hand side.
Okay, so at intersections of Todd and Lana.
Correct, yes.
Okay. And if there's a nice sign.
There's an old sign.
I mean, don't be driving your brand-new Lexus up
right.
there.
No, especially in the wintertime. In the wintertime, that's why it's called Lano. It's called Llanos, and it's the lowlands. We get very muddy down there, so in the wintertime, it's a little bit rough because we you know do all of our feeding with the tractor and stuff, and so it kind of tears up the roadway a little bit. But best time to come would be late spring, summertime, the fall. Those are always wonderful times to come.
Well, we haven't had any rain, which is good.
That's true.
Because the roadway is okay.
Yes.
It's dried up. So it can rain after January 31st.
There you go.
Okay. So get out there now and go to the source itself and wish them well and thank them for all they've contributed. Thank you for coming in today. I know you have a million and one things to do.
Thank you so much for having us.
But it was great seeing you in person here in the studio and thanking you for this cheese that you brought to us and also the cheese that you fed so many families over all these generations.
Thank you.
Best of luck in whatever's coming next.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
John Ash, next time.
Yeah.
In the kitchen.
Yeah.
You and me.
And maybe we'll make a grilled cheese sandwich.
We got to start talking Super Bowl. Oh, you put together some really good Super Bowl recipes, which will be coming. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Coming up next at the table with Clark Wolf, I'm Steve Garner. This is the KSRO Good Food Hour.
Imagine a place where tradition meets innovation, a place where every baker from beginner to pro is part of a thriving community. Welcome to Central Milling's Artisan Baking Center in Petaluma, where this beautiful facility is more than just a state-of-the-art baking facility. It's a hub for lifelong learning and skill mastery.
With world-class instructors and a variety of classes tailored to all skill levels, you'll find the perfect fit, whether you're just starting out or refining your craft. And right now, use the coupon code BAKE15 to get 15% off any in-person class.
Artisan Baking Center is not just a baking facility, it's the farmer, the